When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike Kegley, and we have what is basically categorized as a treat. We have the godfather of recruiting, Mike Farrell, on tonight, and we're going to give him a break because this man does so much recruiting that he basically has like three lives, you know, about 72 hours into every day trying to keep track of recruiting. We're going to talk about the tendrils of the Big Ten contract and Big Ten expansion and how that kind of winnows across the United States and really kind of basically it disrupts and revolutionizes college football as it is. And of course, who better to talk to than the godfather to understand and get a unique perspective on this. Mike, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. It's good, you know, because and we'll get to this as we speak, you know, about expansion and TV contracts. It's good because we're going to get better and more quality football games during the week. You know, Wednesday nights, Friday nights. It's bad because some traditional rivalries are just gone. And that's something that we're going to have to sort of understand that we're in a different age of college football now. Kids are going to get paid. Kids can be free agents, and TV contracts are going to change the landscape of all of college football. And the traditionalists are going to be upset about it, but there's no point being upset about it because it's just here to stay.
Yeah, you know, and bottom line is I know there's probably somebody in the United States who's really upset that the blacksmiths got, you know, shut out when the automobiles came along. You know, bottom line is the change hits, and we've got to kind of see how the deck gets reshuffled. So, you know, we heard about the Big Ten contract, and now we have, you know, the big noon game on Fox at I'm going to go Central Times, but at 11 a.m. Then at 2:30, CBS is going to flip and go from the SEC to the Big Ten. Then at 7 o'clock, you're going to have NBC after the Notre Dame game is going to have the Big Ten. Peacock is going to be streaming a game or games, and then FS1 and Big Ten Network will be getting the same kind of what we call overflow or Illinois games will be on those channels. And now we're hearing if there's ever a West Coast, and we'll get into this later, but if there's a West Coast division of the Big Ten, that they've got a contract already to bid out on for a Big Ten after dark 10 o'clock game. So when you heard all this, you know, you've been around like I have for a long time as a fan. It is a lot to chew on, but when you saw this Big Ten contract come through, what was in your mind and what, you know, ahas did you have?
The good news, you know, as I figured this all out and looked at it, you know, Saturday is not enough. There's only one Saturday, and we're going to have to see very good college football games on other nights. And I think that's great. ESPN not being involved with the Big Ten stinks, just because as a fan of game day forever, you know, not seeing it go to Ohio State or, you know, no more game day in Columbus, no more game day in Ann Arbor, no more whiteout. It's just that sucks because national television is kind of regionalized now, which it's a oxymoron. It really doesn't speak to national television, but you know, ESPN's not going to put their assets into the Big Ten if they're not a partner with them. So, yep. So that's a change. It doesn't affect Illinois fans because, you know, game day doesn't go there. Although you never, never know. I mean, listen, I grew up a Boston College fan in the 80s, and I said never, ever, ever in a million years is game day ever going to go to Boston College. And they did. They actually went there. You know, BC was in a Matt Ryan run, I believe, and the ACC expansion had occurred, and they wanted to get a night game, and they were playing Florida State, and they actually went to BC. So I thought it would never in a million years happen. So it might have happened someday, but it doesn't really affect Illinois fans. It just affects the traditionalists of college football that, you know, are kind of used to SEC 1 week, you know, Big 12 for the Red River, you know, and then maybe over to the Big 10 or to the ACC. That's not going to happen. But the money is amazingly great. It gives security beyond explanation to programs like Illinois, like Indiana. Rutgers and Maryland are probably the two luckiest football programs in the history of football because they both stink. And they came into the Big Ten because of the time it was cable boxes and contiguous states and all that stuff that doesn't really matter now. So they're reaping the benefits of this. What it means for the Big Ten, parity-wise, not a lot. USC and UCLA are going to come in. I think both of them are going to struggle. We are going to see a West Coast expansion in the Big Ten. There's no doubt about that. They're not going to leave USC and UCLA on an island, especially a conference that speaks so highly of contiguous states and so highly of borders. Now they've got, Nebraska to California?
Yes.
You know, that has to be bridged, and it's not going to be bridged to, you know, Colorado into Arizona into California. It's going to be Cal and Stanford who fit the academic blueprint, Oregon and Washington to dominate the Pacific Midwest. Contiguous is gone, but we're definitely going to see a West version. And then what struck me was the SEC's up next, and their deal is going to make this deal look small because Greg Sankey is a genius. The SEC is still the ultimate when it comes to football. And they're going to one-up this, and that's going to be great for everybody else. This is also good for the Big 12 and the Pac-12 if they could stop bickering. And it's good for the ACC because now there's slots on ESPN for those programs. So really, there's no bad news here whatsoever. It's good for Notre Dame, too. That's the other thing. It's bad news for Big 10 fans that have wanted Notre Dame in their conference forever. They're not coming. They're going to stay independent. There was a rumor today about a $70 million deal that they're going to strike with NBC. I think it's going to be higher than that. I always thought that they were probably going to get upwards to $90 to $100 million a year. And this it was $60 million plus $10 million from the ACC, but I think that could be up to $80 million total. And they're going to stay independent, and they're going to continue their relationship with the ACC, and the Big Ten's not going to get them. But who cares? Big Ten doesn't need Notre Dame. But those are all the thoughts that just fell out of my head when I heard this deal was finalized.
So let me throw some crazy thoughts into your head because that's what I do. If I'm the Big Ten, you know, I love your idea of the West Coast because it allows you to have a six-team division, if you want to call it that, like the NFL, makes your non-revenue sports travel a lot easier.
Yep.
Do you think this allows an opportunity for ESPN to broadcast that 10 o'clock game if they want to put some money down and then at least continue that relationship with the Big Ten, which they're going to need to do in bowl season? Does it make sense for ESPN to make a run at that? You know, obviously the late night games don't get quite the ratings. We all know that, but it would be pretty darn cool to see depending on the game, it's going to have to be a secondary level, but you know, Wisconsin visiting Oregon with a 10 o'clock kickoff time would be something that would probably get quite a few TVs across the country. What do you think about if they go to that six teams out west? They'll probably have one more TV deal to scratch. Is that realistic?
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to happen anytime quick. What I've learned in this world of SEO is that when the term expansion is mentioned, then all of a sudden rumors pop up. So, yep. You know, obviously last week when the 7-year deal was signed, it was very open-ended. The language of it was very open-ended to expansion, as any deal will be in the future. The SEC is going to be open to expansion. All of them are. So then all of a sudden today comes out that Oregon and the Big Ten are in discussions to see if they're a fit. I don't believe that. Oregon and Washington also apparently applied to the Big Ten.
Yep.
Like a month ago. These things don't happen that way. There's not an application. This isn't like, you know, going into New Balance and filling out an application and handing to the manager and hoping you get called and hired. And it's not, you know, sitting down for an interview and saying, are you a fit? This is all about dollars and cents and money. And what you mentioned about the non-revenue teams, you know, okay, the NCAA and whatever governing body we end up with is going to have to pretend to be still student athlete friendly. So right. To put USC volleyball players on a cross country flight to Rutgers and then back, that's not going to fly. So they have to, in a PR standpoint, they have to have partners for USC and UCLA out west.
Yep.
Even if it's just to appease any criticism from the non-revenue sports. Now, for the big picture, it's going to bring in more dollars, more money, another TV slot, as you mentioned, dominance of the West. The SEC is not really interested in the West. They're the SEC. If they do any sort of expansion, it would probably be to try to get by the grant of rights of the ACC or, you know, continue to pick off Big 12 teams. So the Big Ten knows the West Coast is its future. But I don't see this happening like tomorrow. These discussions occur on a daily basis. I see within the next couple years, I think they like to strike before the SEC TV contract, because before that window of negotiation begins, I think the SEC could scare some people and, you know, maybe tap a few teams on the shoulder, or at least pretend to raise the value of that TV contract. But I do definitely see ESPN dipping back in here, probably within the next couple of years for an additional slot. And I've been told, I'm not a TV expert. I used to do some stuff down at ESPN back in the day, and I got to learn a lot about TV and college football and how ESPN overextended into their live television rights with college football, but also with every sport. And it's really costing them now, as we just had the first time ever that streaming outnumbers cable. Yeah. You know, so you're going to see others, Apple, Amazon, come into this space with big money, raise the value of this stuff. But ESPN understands the importance of that. Let's get them at 9:30 Eastern time watching, you know, Herbie and Lee Corso and Reese. And let's not let them away from the TV until 1 or 2 in the morning. That late game doesn't get the ratings, as you said, but it's extremely vital to the back end of that long, long, 13, 14 hour day that they want people to spend in front of the television on ESPN. So they'll be back when that expansion occurs, but I think that's probably a couple years away.
Yeah, no, I totally agree there. Let's have some fun, because that's the beauty. Like you said, the word expansion means all sorts of ideas. So my harebrained idea, if I'm the Big Ten, I really like the profile from a academic and from a sports fit of either Texas or Texas A&M. Texas fits perfectly with the Big Ten academically. It's head and shoulders above most of the SEC. Hasn't switched there yet. Texas A&M doesn't want it. They've spent years fantasizing about getting away from Texas. They finally get away from Texas, and the ex-wife moves back in.
Yep.
Is there a chance that the Big Ten could grab one or the other of those two and, you know, either you know, play off the fact that Texas A&M's like, screw it. We're not going to be first among, we're not going to be second among equals again. We're going to go to the Big Ten, or just, you know, put an offer that, that Texas can't refuse before they ever step through the SEC doorway. Is there any, because to me, that's what I would be doing.
Yeah, I don't think there's a chance for either. And the reason being is Texas A&M, you're right, moved away from Texas. And the reason a lot of big, you know, Big 12 teams left is simply because of the favoritism that was occurring towards Texas, you know, propping up their own network on ESPN and just everything was geared towards them. We see that similar love fest in the Big Ten with Ohio State, but it's not to that level because there are other traditional programs in the Big Ten that can hold their own. And Texas, really the only competition as far as a brand in the Big 12 is Oklahoma. So Texas A&M said, we're going to bowl. And they love the SEC. They love just being able to recruit. Now, they're not happy with Texas joining them because that's going to cut into the recruiting. But they do see what happened in Nebraska. The money's there. The success is not. Now, Texas A&M hasn't been a successful program. Nebraska won national championships. Texas A&M hasn't won anything ever.
Right.
But I think there's some concern that we can make our money in the SEC and we're going to make as much in the SEC as we would in the Big Ten because that TV contract is going to be a monster. But if we move, what does that do to us, you know, as far as a program itself? Would we have more success? The thought might be, yeah, the Big Ten is supposed to be easier than the SEC, but you lose that blueprint of recruiting in a way because you are so out of the norm. Nebraska used to really rely on the state of Texas for recruiting. They moved to the Big Ten. They kind of lost a little bit of that. Texas A&M is sort of a fish out of water in the Big Ten. Texas, I don't think Ohio State would ever let Texas in. I don't think they would. I just think that, you know, Gene Smith and all the powers that be at Ohio State would say, no, we don't want them. You know, I mean, they're a threat. Because believe it or not, a 5-7 football team that has had one 10-win season out of the last 8 years and hasn't competed for a national title since 2009 is still a massive brand and a huge threat to the attention seeking in conferences. So the SEC doesn't get threatened by that. Texas A&M doesn't like it. But Alabama, Georgia, they don't care about Texas.
See, and I look at the Big Ten as being interested in Texas because if you look at the grant money that comes educationally for research, it outdoes the football contract by about a factor of 9, maybe. So they look at Texas, you know, the university presidents would look at Texas as, whoa, what a great asset they would be, you know, aside from the athletic.
Economically, right.
Yep, and that's where I just keep thinking, if I'm the Big Ten president, I'm like, shoot, man, we can help Texas pay their way out of whatever fine the SEC has, and we get a chunk of that money in terms of the research. We're fine.
So in a war scenario, you know, and this isn't war, but you're let's say this is world. Let's say this is the 80s in the Cold War. What you just did, you're Russia, and you just dropped 6 nukes on the U.S. And guess what's going to happen? The SEC
go after Ohio State. That's true.
They're going to go after Ohio State. They're going to go after Michigan. They're going to go after with everything with a fever that is unknown to man because this is Southeast football. It's almost not – well, I don't know if it's worth stirring up that hornet's nest. It would be fun because it would be anarchy, you know?
Yes. I would be entertained.
Right. And Ohio State, listen, they're making plenty of money in the Big Ten. But I'm telling you that $7 billion contract is going to be not dwarfed, but it's going to be surpassed by the SEC. And if you're starting to try to get Texas over and the SEC's got more money to offer, they're going to go right after your two biggest brands. And then you're at full-on war. So I would keep the missiles in the silo. I would try to expand west. I would try to get that additional TV spot you're talking about, appease the academics of the world that don't want their volleyball players and their badminton players traveling so far. You know, West Coast football doesn't move the needle like the Southeast or the Big Ten. But that area is open for expansion, and I think that's the area you go in. Or you could start World War III, like you want to.
Well, what about the ACC, though? Because
grant of rights, man, it's so much money.
But I'm thinking that ESPN owns them both, right? And let's say the SEC is negotiating and they want to get as big a contract because they don't have the TV markets that the Big Ten has. They just don't. But they'll be signing later on, so the present value of money, they'll get a higher value. But, you know, the second that they decide, let's just say that ESPN makes the decision, we don't really want to let the ACC, you know, we don't want to pay more. But to strengthen the SEC, you know, we need to let them have Clemson and Florida State, Miami. Then all of a sudden, if I'm the Big Ten, I swoop in, try to look at least from an academic standpoint, you know, Virginia, North Carolina, Duke, which fit much better in the Big Ten from an academic standpoint. And they're not quite the football crazy, but they would be strong athletic programs, not super. And then they have the basketball tradition, which, you know, arguably, at least in the olden days, the SEC was Kentucky, although that is evolving now when it comes to basketball.
And basketball used to matter, and it doesn't now with
money.
Yeah, I agree.
It's secondary. You're right.
It's so secondary. So when Calipari comes out and says his, you know, practice facility smells like urine, we're a basketball team. Well, you know, he got slapped down so fast because if they had to choose a Kentucky between football and basketball right this very moment with the SEC contract coming up, basketball would be gone. Academic footprint of those schools, as you mentioned, Duke, North Carolina, Virginia, Boston College, those are perfect for the Big Ten. It also helps that East Coast market, you know, which they started to dive into with Rutgers in Maryland. The problem is the grant of rights. So it's the TV deal was Swofford negotiated a poor TV deal, but the smart thing he did was he got everybody together and they all agreed somehow to come up with an insurmountable amount of money for any of them to leave. And I don't know how they got them all to agree. I don't know how he got them to all agree because, you know, listen, if you're Wake Forest, sure, you know, Florida State at the time was a real program. You know, and Clemson was on the verge of becoming a real program. And, you know, Miami's Miami. They could always get good. Virginia Tech was a big deal at the time. It's like, I don't know how they got everybody to agree that if you leave, you're going to have to pay this insurmountable amount of money. And the reason I know most schools can't afford it is because, you know, Florida State's still paying Willie Taggart. There is some discussion that they can't get rid of Mike Norvell because they can't afford it. And they're having NIL problems. They can't get the boosters to back this program because it's so far from what it was in when they won a national championship under Jimbo. Money is a big issue for the ACC. So I think the ACC now, you know, they came out and said, yeah, they're going to be aggressive. No, they're not. They went after Notre Dame, no doubt.
Yeah.
And the best they could do, which I knew they would, is to keep Notre Dame in the fold as a semi-partner. And Notre Dame's essentially using the ACC. Here's all our other sports, and we'll play a few of your teams every year. But if they change anything, then I think the grant of rights becomes legally challengeable. And then you're just opening up a can of worms because you're right. The SEC would pick off Clemson. You know, because Clemson and South Carolina, that'd be great. I think they would pick off Georgia Tech.
Oh,
now, they stink.
To have Atlanta would be pretty, you're right.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes, huge market. I think they would have to choose. This would be the most interesting thing to me. I think they would have to choose between Florida State and Miami because the Gators aren't letting both of them into the SEC, no way. And so which one do you pick? You pick Miami. And then Florida State's kind of like, whoa, we're in Tallahassee, and where are we going to go now? So I think all of that's interesting, intriguing, but the Granite Rights is so formidable. I think it's going to be difficult for anybody to poach an ACC team right now.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be able to be poached. I think the Big Ten's going to have to be, in boxing parlance, they're going to have to be a Salvador Sanchez or a
Wilfredo. Oh, I love boxing.
Yeah, they're going to have to be. They're going to have to be a counterpuncher on this one.
How on earth, you a boxing fan?
Oh, huge! You would. Not.
I mean, you just referenced two of the tremendous, great defensive fighters of the 80s.
Salvador Sanchez, if he hadn't gotten that wreck, would have went down, in my opinion, as the greatest featherweight of all time.
He was unbelievable.
Yeah,
and Benitez,
he died at 25 or 26.
I know.
What a career he had.
Very tragic. Very tragic.
Yeah,
And Benitez is the forgotten one, of the four kings. You got Leonard and Hearns and Hagler and Duran. Almost beat Tommy Hearns.
Well, I mean, look, that fight that he fought Sugar Ray Leonard, you know how many days he trained to fight Sugar Ray Leonard? Like 11 days. And, you know, he had all sorts of, you know, issues.
Yeah.
And was a fantastic fighter. And then, of course, that's why I laugh, and people are going to love this. This is what I do during my podcast. I always laugh when I have to hear Floyd talk about being the greatest of all time. It's like, dude, if you were a welterweight in the 80s, Sugar Ray would have destroyed him. Tommy Hearns
would have killed him with the reach and the
power. Oh, my God. I think Duran, at least the Duran that fought Leonard, would wipe
Sugar
him
Ray
out.
Sugar Ray in Montreal, yeah.
I think
Benitez, Duran in Montreal would have beaten, no doubt.
Yeah, Benitez could have went toe-to-toe with him. And here's the other guy, because Floyd didn't punch hard enough. And one guy who was almost invincible, if you weren't power, was Donald Curry. And Donald Curry would have picked him apart, because you can't hit Curry. And if he wasn't afraid of your punch, because his chin wasn't that good,
right,
he'd destroy you. And so Floyd would be like the sixth best welterweight of the 80s, and he wants everybody to call him the GOAT.
Well, listen, revisionist history, man, and it's all recent bias. Everybody thinks Floyd Mayweather would beat those guys, but no, I mean, they would absolutely get destroyed, and in different ways. I mean, Tommy Hearns with the reach would have just kept him at bay, and just, he would have done what he did to Pepino Cuevas, Pepino was more of a slugger.
Yes.
He didn't move like Floyd, so it would have taken him a little bit longer to catch him, but when he did, lights out. Duran would have worn him down if it was Duran in Montreal, because that was just the epitome of, Duran as a lightweight was better, but Duran as a welterweight in that fight, that was probably his best performance ever.
I agree, totally.
You could argue the Hagler fight where he lost, you know. Yeah. Well, yeah, and in his lightweight days, he just destroyed everybody pretty much. But yeah, it's fun to go back on there. We're on a big tangent, but the ACC is going to have to be, you know, I don't even know what's the heavyweight's name now, who is a great defensive fighter, and you can't hit him. What the hell is his name?
Well, Usyk showed, you know, Anthony Joshua didn't get much.
The gypsy.
Tyson Fury.
Yeah, I can't even name a boxer now, because here's what happened. The 80s was so great, and then they started introducing the WBO and the IBF.
Yeah.
Everybody became a champion, and people started popping up too many divisions. Tommy Hearns, the cruiserweight, and all this other stuff. I lost interest after the Four Kings sort of win. I watched Tyson because he was infatuating,
yes,
you know, to watch. And I watched a few guys here and there, Julian Jackson and stuff like that, because they would just, you know, put people out. James Toney. But I lost my interest in boxing after the Four Kings. So I can't even name Tyson Fury, but that's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to sort of, you know, do the old Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope and just try to not get any punches landed on him. But the Granite Rights, I think, goes to 2033 or something.
No, 2036.
Ridiculous. 2036. So, they're in good
but
shape.
But I'm telling you, the people who will get hurt by this is the SEC will be – they'll be seductive, and they'll be in ESPN's ear. You know, we need another division. We need another division. We need, you know, pick a Miami. We need Clemson. We need Georgia Tech. We need North Carolina, whoever it is. And the Big Ten has to have every duck in a row, because the minute that you know that thing's getting broke, the minute you hear a sniff that this thing could fall apart, you've got to be into those schools And the second that it comes out, I think the ACC is going to tear up in like 2 days, whenever that, it might be 10 years from now.
It could be. And if it does, the Big Ten's not going to be in any situation where they're going to be in trouble, because those teams will come knocking on their door and begging them. I mean, honestly, Pitt has wanted to be in the Big Ten forever. And you know, academically, they may not fit the footprint, and their fan base isn't that great, and they play in an NFL stadium, all that stuff, but they're still in the state of Pennsylvania, and they're between Penn State and Ohio State. They're not going to be ignored, but they're going to come begging. Boston College is going to come begging, UVA begging. You know, the real target here is the worst team in the ACC, short of Duke, is Georgia Tech, which is hilarious to me. I mean, Jeff Collins probably going to be fired this year. Good guy. I like him.
Yep.
You know, Paul Johnson was running the triple option, and that was tricky and fun and difficult to defend for a little while, but they haven't been relevant or good in a very long time. But they're in Atlanta.
Yep.
And with NIL, with TV markets, with stream, with all this stuff, wherever the populace is still going to be an area that gets money. That's why USC hasn't been good in a long time. UCLA has never been good, but they wanted LA. And you got to remember, this is also an LA that didn't have an NFL franchise for years and years and years, because there's so much apathy around football there. But it doesn't matter, because the population's there. And if you can get a small percentage of a large population, as opposed to 100% of, you know,
Champagne,
wherever. Yeah, exactly. Then you're going to go for that big, big hit. So I think, you know, I think expansion is going to slow down. It would be funny if Kevin Warren and Greg Sankey were two of the most opposite human beings you're ever going to meet. If they got together and said, you know what, let's just stop for now. Let's just stop. We're both at a good number. We're not going to hit the West Coast. You guys don't blow up the ACC or blow up the Big 12. And let's just stop, because they've got a really good product. Adding USC and UCLA, great product. Okay. The travel situation, I get it. But honestly, let's stop pretending we care about student athletes. You know, what about 9 a.m. kickoffs? All this other garbage that they said they wouldn't do. We're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And the SEC, adding Oklahoma and Texas, they've got an amazing product. My worry is you get to 20 and you're going to start watering down that product a little bit. I mean, Cal's not good. Stanford's not good. They may have good academics, but they're good once every 4 years. Oregon, Washington was last good when Steve Entman was there. I mean, you know, that was 1,000 years ago. Yeah, they made the playoff, you know, in the beginning.
Yeah, Don James isn't coming back, is he?
No. So, I mean, you're adding, you know, it's almost like when the cable boxes, you added Maryland and Rutgers, and it's like, ugh. And remember how embarrassing those two teams were when they came in. I mean, Maryland had a coach that was, you know, had a fatality.
Yeah.
And before that was Randy Edsall, who was the biggest nightmare, probably the biggest jerk in college football. You know, Bo Pelini could argue that. And then you had Rutgers. They had the women's basketball issue. They had the athletic directors. They were going through them like once every year. You know, there was just so many, and football fell apart. They added those two teams, and now, if you look at it, I bet you if they had a do-over, they would say, well, geez, we didn't know it was going to be streaming. We didn't know cable boxes weren't going to matter. Can we just sort of do-over and get rid of those two teams?
Although I think the eyeballs, the TV market size still makes a difference. I think at least it will be through maybe this 7-year run, and then I think it'll probably be totally turned on its head. That's the other thing I think that we've seen here is Jim Delaney was so far ahead of the rest of his peers, because he could have done the 15-year deal, and he chose to say, yeah, we're the biggest, and we're going to do a 6-year deal because they'll be streaming and we can make a ton more money. And it turned out to be just a genius move. And he is, you know, and then Kevin Warren, what I love about him is you're going to have people who are watching Fox, they're watching NBC, they're watching CBS. And then what are Fox, NBC, and CBS going to advertise on Sundays during the NFL games? Next week's Big Ten game. So these people are going to be sitting there all day long and they're going to be going, well, I'm going to watch the Cowboys today, or I'm going to watch the Bears, and boom, there's your Fox, you know, at noon. You turn on Sunday night and you know, oh, there's the next Saturday night game, and you turn on CBS for the Raiders or whoever, and boom, you know, it is a genius move. And then the other thing is the cross promotional opportunities are, you know, they're just phenomenal. Because you've let each of these networks share in on the Big Ten championship game. How long do you think it takes the Big Ten to have a number one versus number four and number two versus number three, and then as a Big Ten championship game?
I think we're headed there for every place. I mean, you know, you look at where we were in every sport 25 years ago. You know, we're talking about boxing in the 80s, but, you know, look at baseball. It was two teams in each American National, two teams, yep. And then they played. The NBA, I believe, was in the 80s. Was it six? It might have been eight, but it's now you got playing games. You've got everything. Yep. You know, the NCAA tournament was 64 teams. That's not a case anymore. And on, NHL expansion with playoffs. Everything expands the playoffs because that's what people care about. In college football, purists are worried about killing the regular season because that's the playoff. That's not the playoff. It's never the playoff. Northwestern playing Nebraska this Saturday in Dublin is not a playoff game. It's not. What people care about is Ohio State versus Michigan State in the, you know, 1-4 game that you're talking about. That means something. If Ohio State loses this game, you know, they're not going to the Big Ten championship and they're out of the playoff. Now, the playoff will be expanded and somehow Ohio State will backdoor their way in because they do every year. Yep. 2016, of course, was the most ridiculous example of that. But they want meaningful football games, and you could still have that in the regular season. But expanded playoff on a national level, expanded playoff in conferences, that's going to be – And here's the funny thing about it, because remember the SEC got so frustrated with the lack of expansion, you know, when the ACC was sort of working with other conferences and they said, we're not ready to vote on expansion yet. What did the SEC do? They planted a rumor immediately. That's why Sankey's a genius. Oh, we're going to do our own playoff. We don't need any of these other conferences. We don't need the Big Ten. We need the Pac-12, Big 12, ACC, whatever. We'll just have a SEC only playoff. And everybody got scared. Now, they haven't agreed upon the number for the playoff, but I can tell you that particular rumor was sent out there to send shockwaves into these others and say, we'll do it ourselves if you don't play ball with us. And the Big Ten can now do that themselves as well. Yep. They can say, we don't need the Big Ten, we don't need the Pac-12, we don't even need the SEC, we'll just do it ourselves. So what you're saying is going to happen. I just hope it doesn't get to the point of 1-16.
Yeah,
you know, because that would be just pointless.
Yeah, well, you know, and let's hope it doesn't get there. I'm going to throw a couple scenarios at you. I think that USC is going to be one of the huge winners on this, because I think Lincoln Riley, when you give him the NIL playbook that he's got, he's already an aggressive guy. And I think that, you know, again, Los Angeles, all that money that's out there, like you said, you only have to get a few people to do that and put in some big money. I think USC is going to be a much stronger force than what we anticipate, because I think they're going to have the dollars that an Alabama or a Ohio State have, and I think it's going to be surprising.
And on paper, I agree with you. You know, because when Lincoln Riley left for USC, obviously following recruiting, I saw they raised interest in California players. You know, the Justin Flo's and Kayvon Thibodeau's and DJ Uiagalelei's and you know, Bryce Young's of the world that were leaving California probably wouldn't have left if you had a Lincoln Riley there. And they were turning away recruits at first because they wanted to be picky. And of course, in the portal, you know, getting Caleb Williams makes sense because he coached him. But Jordan Addison, I mean, everybody wanted Jordan Addison. You know, Dye up at Oregon going down there. On paper, the only caveat I'll put to that is when teams have switched conferences that were power programs, they haven't been successful.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you.
So that makes me pause because of Miami going from the Big East to the ACC. I'm like, they're going to dominate. Okay. Like that's a no brainer. Virginia Tech, you know, with Vic, they were a national championship caliber program and they didn't fade, but they didn't do great. Right. You know, Missouri started off like gangbusters in the SEC and then fell on their face.
It took Penn A&M State years. Took Penn State years to elevate their program. Yeah. Nebraska still hasn't.
So when I see these programs that move to different conferences, and I see a lack of success overall, that you could not have convinced me in a million years that Miami was going to be what they are today. Right. The move of the ACC, what was in 2005? It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I would have told you by now, 2022, they would have won the ACC title and probably a national title. You know, ACC title maybe 7 times, national title 3 times. You could not convince me otherwise because they were, if you remember, 4 years removed from getting robbed of the national title by that late flag against Ohio State. Yeah. And look at them now. They fell apart. So that's the one thing I'll play devil's advocate on USC is that it's a different brand of football. They're going to have the recruits. But I don't know. And again, everybody says, oh, you're going to be playing in Iowa in December in a snow game. How many Big Ten snow games really are there?
Yeah, not a lot. But you know what? We get beat in the Big Ten. We get beat enough out in California, the Rose Bowl, that we're going to tell you there's 100 million.
But there aren't that many. But you're right. It's going to be different. You're traveling all the way. You're playing at Kinnick. You know, it's a tough place to play. It could be a night game. It could be 20 degrees. You're USC. Now, yeah, oh, we played Notre Dame every year. We played in cold weather and all that stuff. I don't know, man. It's just a little different. And everybody in the Big Ten, you know, who's got a pulse is going to be gunning for those guys. They're going to want to show California kids what it's like to play Big Ten football. So there's a chip on their shoulder. And I will tell you this. Lincoln Riley, I don't know if he can handle the pressure at USC. This could be the best soundbite in the history of college football right on your podcast, because if it comes true that he can't handle it, because there is a level of sensitivity that he has, and he's under the biggest spotlight he's ever been under, and there's always going to be the NFL knocking on his door. And I know he signed this outrageous $10 million, $12 million deal at USC, but the Dallas Cowboys can look at that deal and say, we laugh at that deal.
Although Jerry Jones is cheap, you know, that you got that going. And he doesn't want to coach.
He's also dying.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's old.
He does not want, you know, he would rather, and I'm a huge Cowboy fan my whole life. He would rather get 100% of credit for going 9-8 than have to share the credit for going 17-0 and winning a Super Bowl.
Well, let's say he goes the way of Al Davis, though. Okay. You know, not, or George Steinbrenner. Like, not
Steinbrenner, I'll take. Al Davis kind of pulled the Vince McMahon, you know, he just kind of went.
Let's just say that somebody else takes over.
Yeah.
Because his marbles aren't all there.
Yeah.
And they want Lincoln Riley. Like, Jerry Jones may not really, and I'm not saying, I mean, listen, Jerry Jones doesn't have a foot in the grave. He's to my knowledge, he doesn't have any sort of dementia or anything like that. I'm a big Cowboys fan. I think he's been an insane since Quincy Carter. That's what he's been. He's been crazy. But let's say an NFL team with a lot of money wants Lincoln Riley after a couple of years there, and he gets tired of NIL. He's tired of the portal. He gets tired of recruiting. He gets tired of all this garbage, and he wants to make a ton of money there. I mean, the Lincoln Riley era is very promising at USC, but it's much, much, much more fragile than I think the average person knows. Okay,
that's fair.
And I know this from just a few little trinkets of information that have come my way that I, you know, will not source, but surprised me a lot. And I'm a 10,000 foot view guy. If it looks like something, then it is something. You know, like people say, oh, geez, look at this. You know, Malachi Nelson's the quarterback who's going to USC. He just signed with Clutch. That's LeBron's group. They're LA based. Oh, but he might flip to A&M. Okay, no. No, no, no. 10,000 foot view says he followed Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma commitment to USC commitment. He took his A&M visit to raise his value a little bit more. USC, he just signed with an LA-based agent. If he goes anyplace but USC, I'll be stunned. That's the 10,000 foot view. And a few of the things that I've learned over the last year about Lincoln Riley and USC have led me to believe from a 10,000 foot view that this is not as much of a layup as I think it should be.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. So here's my interest in the NIL. So we're entering the second, you know, we've had 2 years of it now, or we're in the second year, you know. I wonder when you get away from the traditional powers, because, you know, when Coach Day says I need 13 million, well, Ohio State fans line up and he gets his 13 million, and they're going to go, you know, they're going to compete for a Big Ten title, and they're probably going to make it into the playoff. So those people who paid, they have a payoff for them in terms of the emotion and saying I'm a part of it. Same with an Alabama booster. Let's say same with a Georgia booster, and let's say same with a Clemson booster. But a Wisconsin booster, an Iowa booster, an Illinois booster, when you go to year 3, 4, and 5, I wonder for the normal teams, what appetite is there going to be for to pay in money so that you can finish 6th in the Big Ten?
Depends on how much money you have.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
I mean, there are people out there who have money to burn.
Exactly.
I do not.
Yeah,
I'm doing a podcast with you at 9 o'clock Eastern time on a Monday. I do not have money to burn. If I did, I'd be on my own island,
yes.
You know, directing people around. But some people have so much money, that it's not really an issue for them. And what they want, yeah, maybe the team's not going to win a national championship. I mean, any booster that contributes to NIL for Illinois that thinks they're going to win a national championship is either delusional or dumb, because it's not going to happen. I hate to break it to you. Illinois fans, no offense. You know, I've been a middle of the road team fan forever. The pinnacle of Boston College was number 2 in the country, and they went out and lost to Maryland the next game by like 30.
Yeah.
Okay. They made it the ACC title twice, but I never, ever in a million years ever thought they'd win a national championship. Even if Flutie, they finished 3rd in the country, I knew they weren't going to win a national championship.
Right.
And I understand that because I'm smart. Illinois is never going to win a national championship in football. So if I'm a booster, I'm saying, what do I want? I want a competitive football team. I want a team that can upset Iowa and can upset Wisconsin, and a team that can play with Ohio State and maybe upset them every once in a while. That's what I want. But I also want great players. I want Simeon Rice. Where's he? And I want him to play for my team because I want to brag about him forever. You know, I want Dick Butkus. You know, I want somebody. And Illinois' track record in the NFL is really horrible. This is one of the things I looked at when I was starting to cover this a little bit more deeply. It's awful. So name the best, other than Dick Butkus, best NFL player to play at Illinois.
Probably Simeon Rice or maybe Rashard Mendenhall, Jeff George. But they're
very average NFL careers at best, right? High draft picks, but it's
yeah.
So
red Grange.
I want more of those guys. I want to be, you know, I want to be Oklahoma State, and I want to brag about Barry Sanders.
Right,
I want to
right.
brag about Dexter Manley. I want to brag about, you know, Hall of Fame Dez Bryant. He's not a Hall of Famer, but I want to brag about those guys.
Yeah.
You know, And so as an NIL guy, I'm still going to pour money into the program. Now, if you go 3-9 and you stink, maybe my money dries up. But as a Ohio State, they want national championships. They've got enough Heisman winners. They've got enough first round picks every year. They want national championships. If I'm
right.
in Illinois, though, I want guys. I want dudes. I want my Luke Kuechlys. You know, using the Boston College reference, I want someone who I can brag about that goes in the top 10 of the draft and has a Hall of Fame career so that I can buy his helmet that says, you know, got the big eye for Illinois and it's signed. And I don't want that last guy to be Dick Butkus, who played right. it, you know, in the 60s. I don't want that. So I think that's where, but I get to your point, you know, the money is going to continue to flood in. The pressure is going to be higher on the Ryan Days of the world. The middling programs are going to have to find boosters that want what I just mentioned. Great players coming to their team so that they can compete. Mendenhall, you mentioned, was part of that Rose Bowl team.
Yep.
People still talk about that. Yep. How often do you hear about that on your message boards? Yep. Daily?
Well, we have to talk about something, and unfortunately, we haven't. You know, to me, it comes down to who you hire as a coach, because you look at Illinois, they had John Makovic. He left for Texas. We haven't had a good coach here. Could do both. He could do offense, defense, and actually recruit. Until we'll see if Brett Bielema can do it, because in that 20-year period, crap. Conversely, so let's take a look at this. Iowa hires Hayden Fry. Illinois hires Mike White. Illinois hires John Makovic. So still pretty competitive with what Hayden's doing. Then all of a sudden, you go Lou Tepper, you go Ron Turner, you know, you're into Ron Zook, who could recruit but couldn't do anything else. Then you take it. Then you're in. I mean, then all of a sudden, you know, you got Tim Beckman. Yeah, you know. And meanwhile, all that Iowa's done is Hayden Fry, Kirk Ferentz. Mm-hmm. So to me, college football is all about when you hire. And I know that this isn't right, but if you're an AD and you're hiring a football coach, you can't be wrong, because it. Not only does it mean you win on the football field, but your whole athletic program is energized. That's the circulatory system. That's the heartbeat of your whole athletic department. And Illinois has been, you know, Lovie Smith was an interesting risk, but he didn't work out. So Brett Bielema has a mountain in front of him, a mountain of crap since 1992. And he's got to find a way to slog through that. It's not an easy job, and you know, you have to hire the right person.
Right person that's going to stay too. I mean, that's the other key. It's like you could get a PJ Fleck, and he could move on to the next job. You know, that's the amazing part about Iowa, and honestly, to give the same credit to Wisconsin, sort of. I mean, I know Brett left for Arkansas, but that was a big opportunity, you know, but you know, Paul Chris had a job at Pitt and they just yanked him away because he wanted to be at Wisconsin. He'll be there for as long as he wants to be because he played there. He loves it. We didn't play there, but he loves it. It's where he cut his teeth as a coach. That's also the problem. You need somebody who's going to be loyal to you. Pat Fitzgeralds aren't out there. You know, do you want to hand the reins to Butkus? You know, you can't. It's hard. It's really hard because you can get that stepping stone coach who has success and then leaves you.
Yeah, the Urban Meyers.
So how do you get a Kirk Ferentz and how do you keep him? And then the fans still complain about him because he hires his son to run the offense and the offense is horrible. And they're tired of winning 9-10 games every year. This sucks. Well, try being Kansas for a day. Then you realize it won't suck. So that's a real sweet spot. And it's hard to really land it.
Especially
if you're that guy's going to be.
Yeah, if you're Bill Self, it's got to be very frustrating to be at Kansas. You're like, I just want a national title. Nobody gives a you know what. Because I'm a basketball coach. You know, and he's got to be sitting there saying, geez, maybe I should have stayed at Illinois all those years ago.
There's so much into it. And what we look at is we look at the horrible hires, right? I mean, honestly,
We're experts at that at Illinois, just so you know. Well, we're really good at looking at the horrible hires.
Everybody's hindsight is 2020, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Herm Edwards has had more success at Arizona State than I thought. Now he's, you know, off field issues. He's probably gonna be fired this year because, you know, his entire staff's gone. He can't recruit, you know, without his guys that were doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing. He's not gonna bring in talent. The recruiting class is horrendous. You know, that's him, but he was a bad hire and he just got successful. Maybe it was Jaden Daniels. Maybe it was something else. Lovie Smith was a horrible hire, just horrible, horrible. And we could see that. But you wonder how these guys have these discussions in the room. And you know, obviously the athletic director and the president, and this is the guy we want to get. Okay, well, he hasn't coached in college football for 20 years, but he was with the Bears. Oh, let's take that guy who was completely out of touch when it comes to anything involving college football, and let's hope that he can turn us into something. You wonder how the Tim Beckman hire, you wonder how these hires come out, because you look at them and you're like, this didn't make sense on paper.
Yeah, well, Beckman's an interesting thing, because you look at him and then that's when you find out that if the AD is an idiot, you have no chance. Because basically, you know, you had Mike Thomas hiring people. He was the AD at the time, you know, and nobody wanted to work with him. So already you cut your universe down to like six dudes who'd be willing to work for him. And generally those people wanted to move up. Yeah. I still remember I generally will hold my judgment on most hires, because you got to see what a guy does. He could be the next Urban Meyer. He could be the next Tim Brewster. You don't know for sure. Right. And in the end, I remember looking at that going, this is the guy they hired. And it was just like, as an Illinois fan, it was depressing, because you're like, this guy's been announced as coach for about 3 minutes. And already I'm trying to figure out, like, will he be here for 3 years or four?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 21-16 at Toledo, and he's your guy. But this is the funny thing, too, is like people were protesting Gene Chizik's hire from Iowa State at Auburn. People were like in the airport with signs, we don't want this guy. And he won a national championship. Now, Cam Newton won the national championship, right. and Gus Malzahn kind of won the national championship. But the guy fell into a national championship. And then after that, it was really revealed what a horrible head coach he was.
Right.
But how did he get hired? His record at Iowa State, I think he had a losing record. So how do you pick that guy? It's just sometimes it's just very strange to me to sort of see these decisions, because these are higher education. I have friends who work in higher education and they all think they're smarter than everybody else.
Yeah.
And sometimes they are so dumb. So if I'm an Illinois fan, I'm hoping for that lightning in a bottle coach. You know, I'm hoping for that guy who's going to use this as a stepping stone, because you know what? Even if he has success for 3 years, I get those 3 years, he leaves, and I'm going to get another coach who's excited about coming there because he saw what that guy got.
Right, exactly.
You know, in his job. So you need to break the cycle in some way. That's why when Brett Bielema was hired, I said, this is a stopgap hire. You know, this is a guy that you know can build your program back to respectability. We know what he's going to do. He's very predictable offensively and defensively with what he wants to do and his game planning and all that stuff. You know he's not going to go 1-11. But you know he's not going to go 11-1. And then from there, you find a coach after him that maybe might be that young go-getter who can recruit and coach. You know, I look at Jeff Hafley. You know, he's a good example of a guy who, you know, everybody wanted. I think wasn't Illinois even interested in him at one point in time? I'm not sure, but he's like the assistant coach that everybody sort of wants to mold and put in a situation where he can. PJ Fleck is a great example of that as well. These guys are good hires, and if they stay, they stay. And if they go, they go. But as long as you're winning more games than losing, I mean, right now, Illinois, 7-5 would be probably okay for the fan base. I mean, they would probably
would be ecstatic, because you go to a bowl game and you actually – even if you lose the bowl game, you have a winning record. I mean, come on, that for Illinois,
Belk Bowl or something.
Hey, do you know the last time Illinois won 8 games or more back to back?
I do not.
Like 89-90.
Wow.
I mean, that long ago, and it's and you know you're that close to Chicago. But here's how I look at it, and again, I'm a bit of a Big Ten geek, but I go back to the late 1960s. And people don't realize Michigan had not been good for about a decade and a half. They were not that great. Illinois gets in trouble with the slush fund. It knocks Illinois down, and Michigan hires Bo Schembechler. And Bo changes the face of Michigan football, and they haven't looked back since, you know, in all reality. And you know, you need that guy like that who can literally by force of will, by influencing kids to come there and getting people to follow him up a hill for no reason.
And the funny part about that is, though, in this day and age, and I'm looking this up as we speak. No, he started off very well. I look at the Bobby Bowdens and the Frank Beamers of the world, and I wonder if they were in 2022, how many years they'd be given. You know,
that is the fans are definitely different now, because every school expects their team. Like if you go, you know, read, they almost expect, like, even if they're 0-10, they expect their team to play, you know, great ball every week. And I don't think if you're not involved in sports, you're just peripheral, you know, watching on TV and maybe you haven't played sports. You don't understand that those guys on the other team want to win just as bad as you do. And then if they're more talented than you, or their coach is better than you, or God forbid both, it can get kind of ugly pretty quick. Just ask Wisconsin when they played Ohio State.
Yeah. It's because I'm looking at Bo, and he started off great. You know, he went to the Rose Bowl his first year and all that stuff. But I was talking about Scott Frost on another radio show earlier today. And, you know, it's funny because they went 3-9 last year and they lost all those close games. This year, maybe they could go 7-5 if everything breaks, but they could go 5-7 again. But, man, you just don't know. Like, they're going to get rid of Scott Frost. If he loses the Northwestern game, he could be fired on the plane ride home. You don't know. But they could be a year away, but he won't get that year. You just can't. He's got 1 year more than people think he should have already.
I agree.
And guys like Beamer and Bowden would have been fired long ago. And where would those programs be if those guys were fired like 3 or 4 years into their tenure? So it's always interesting to me. That's why I think, you know, the Bielema hire was a good one after Lovey, because you know what you're going to get. You're not going to get anything crazy and exciting. You're not going to get, you know, the Wisconsin teams, you know, that push for Big Ten titles, but you're also not going to get the Arkansas teams that went 3-9 in the SEC. You're going to get something in the middle.
Here's the X factor for Bielema. And I've interviewed him a couple times now. I don't know him, you know, to be real honest with you. But he reminds me more of a executive that you see in the working world. I'm a guy who's worked at Novartis, Allergan, State Farm. So I've worked at a lot of big companies. And his stay in the NFL, especially maybe the Belichick coaching tree,
right?
His attention to detail reminds me not of a football coach, but it reminds me of a VP of operations. Because he's got, like, things mapped. I mean, I swear to God that when he scratches his nose at 10 a.m. in the morning, that's on his to-do
list. Scripted?
Yes.
Probably.
And so I don't know what he was like prior to the NFL, but his attention to detail is ginormous. And the problem is, in the NFL, that attention to detail wins you games because the talent is equally dispersed. Yeah. In college football, that attention to detail can only take you so far against Ohio State, that has more five stars on their roster this year than you've had in the last 30.
You could probably coach yourself into 2.5 quarters of, you know, competitive football.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, there's no salary cap in college football, and you cannot compare these rosters. I mean, there's 60 players or 60 plus players on the Ohio State roster that are four stars or five stars. Yeah, I don't care how good a coach you are. Every once in a while, you're going to get a game, you know, like Ferentz did at Kinnick, where you just, everything goes right and Ohio State's flat and you beat them. But those are few and far between. So what you really want is, you want a competitive football team. It's so funny because if you ask 99 out of 100 people who are just average college football fans, what side of the ball Brett Bielema coaches, 99 would say offensive line.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the way he runs the offense, because of its power football, because he coached at Wisconsin, because he looks like an offensive line, because he's a little chubby. Nobody knows that this guy is a really, really smart defensive coach. And what he did and had success with at Wisconsin. So I think he can keep them in games. You know, but 7-5 would be great. And
oh,
and
be what, awesome.
Well, that stabilizes your program.
It I
puts
agree.
You in the middle of the West. It allows recruiting to grow a little bit. You know, that's what their goal is with him, I believe, is, you know, fix this. Stop this bleeding. Make us average.
Right.
We'll take average.
Well, let me ask you this. This will be the last question. So, because I don't want to take your whole evening up here. But so Brett Bielema has the second most amount of offensive linemen drafted as a head coach behind Nick Saban in all of college. So, and he's even had a couple of years where he wasn't coaching, right? He was in the NFL. So if you're an offensive lineman, Mike, how important is that to you to look at a guy and say, well, you know, he there's 3 years he wasn't even in there, and only Nick Saban has more guys than him, and we know he's not getting the 5 stars that Nick gets.
No, it's important. And the other thing that's slightly more important than that, and you're seeing it at Northwestern, is who was before you. You've got to have somebody on the roster to sell. So you look at, I was just broke down the offensive line classes, yep. You know, in the Big Ten. And I was, you know, sort of diving into it a little bit deeper because I don't pay attention usually to who Indiana recruits at offensive line, and no offense to Illinois or whatever. It's more about, oh, geez, look, you know, Penn State got the number one guard in the country. Ohio
right.
State has four stars. What I noticed was Northwestern. It stood out to me. Rashawn Slater led to Peter Skoronski. Peter Skoronski leads to this class. And that's what you need to sell. You have to have a guy on the roster or who recently just went high. They don't have that. But what they do is they're going to sell that fact that he puts guys in the NFL.
Right.
It's going to help recruiting on the offensive side of the ball. His history, I mean, when he went to Arkansas, that's what they did. They lined up. They you know, 5 offensive linemen, 2 tights,
yeah.
Alex Collins, down your throat. If you were a offensive lineman and you like to run block, which is your favorite thing as an offensive lineman,
exactly,
pound on those guys, lay on them and roll on them and knock them down all game. That's one of the programs you want to go to. But the problem is negative recruiting. If I'm recruiting against Brett Bielema, I'm saying, okay, well, Illinois doesn't win football games. Look at them last year. They didn't win. Look at them under Lovey. He went to a Super Bowl. He couldn't win. You know, they haven't won since you mentioned 1989-90. I'm pointing out all that stuff.
Right, exactly.
And I'm also saying if I'm on this team, I'm pointing out, let's say I'm Penn State, let's say I'm Ohio State, let's say I'm Michigan, let's say I'm even Northwestern. I'm pointing to my offensive lineman that was drafted recently. And all of those teams have guys that were drafted more recently. And so it's going to take him a couple of years. He's got to find a guy on this roster, you know, that breaks through, that makes a third round draft grade, and then has some success. And it's a long, slow crawl because all that stuff is great. He's going to go into the living room and tell them about the Nick Saban thing. And he's number 2 and all that stuff. That kid's going to go to the next living room. You know, the next coach is going to come into his living room and he's going to shoot all that down. Well, Coach Bielema was just here and he told me that he's put as many offensive linemen in the NFL as Nick Saban. Yeah. But guess what? Not at Illinois, and they don't win. And
yeah.
Negative recruiting will kill you unless you're winning. That's the great part about recruiting, man. When it starts going, everything sells everything. When it's bad, it's just hard to get out from under that. You could sell vision. You could sell playing time all you want. But it's not like it when it's rolling. And so when I'm going through these comparisons by position, it's not depressing. If I'm an Illinois fan, I'm not depressed because all those guys you mentioned, they weren't 4 stars that Brett Bielema put in the NFL.
Right.
No.
Right.
You know, some of them were, I know some of these kids. I follow their recruiting. 3-star kids. Robbie Havenstein, massive offensive lineman, just won a Super Bowl. 3-star, big, 360-pound kind of fat kid from Maryland, went off to Wisconsin and caught lightning in a bottle. Now, he's post-Bielema,
right.
But that's the type of guy they were getting as a 3-star. So if I'm a 3-star going to Illinois, I'm like, this guy's going to coach me up and I'm going to be good.
Cool. Well, that gives Illinois fans a little bit of hope. And we have talked about a ton of different subjects. Why don't you tell people – who are unfamiliar, not that there's that many who wouldn't know who you were, but why don't you tell people where they can find your stuff, where they can find your website. And because if they've enjoyed this hour, then there's a way besides just coming to the Illini Guys, where he focuses on the University of Illinois recruiting, you can get the full Farrell experience.
Yeah, it's MikeFarrellSports.com. It's small, it's cozy. This is the thing I've noticed. It's very, very funny because I worked for a big company, obviously, for a very long time and helped build them up to where they are. And they're kind of, to me, they're faltering a little bit, and that's fine. But man, with that behind you, coaches kissed my butt so much more. Now that they're not afraid as much anymore because my site is smaller. Yep. And my rankings aren't paid attention to as much as the other sites and stuff like that. So that's why I'm starting to see the level of sensitivity from some coaches that I never saw before, because they were always like, "Hey, Mike, how you doing? Oh, we love you, love you, love you." And complain about this and then love you.
Right.
I'm trying to make it fun. I'm trying to make it conversational. I'm trying to make it opinion. I got an article tomorrow, MikeFarrellSports.com, about NIL and distraction, which is something we can talk about on a future podcast, how NIL is changing. Everybody thinks that, you know, Spencer Rattler sucked last year as a Heisman favorite and preseason number one player in the NFL yep. draft. Sam Howell was the only guy who was discussed as potentially number one. He was supposed to go number two. He ended up in the fifth round. Derek King had all these deals. He ended up getting hurt. DJ Uwangalele was Fansville, Dr. Pepper Fansville guy. He sucked.
Yep. Yep.
This is not a coincidence. This was the first year of NIL, and these are different distractions being thrown at these kids and different areas of focus for their time. So not only is it school, social life, girlfriends, football, film study, playbook, now it's business, and they're running their own businesses, and you're going to get a lot more guys to flame out. That's the type of stuff that I want to talk about on the website and bring to light, and it's going to make me unpopular.
Right.
Because the one that I bring out is Quinn Ewers, and that article will be out tomorrow. Yep. And guess who's going to stop following me? Quinn Ewers.
Yeah.
And guess who's going to stop talking to me? The Texas football staff. But I want to talk about real stuff in college football without any political agenda. My rankings are coming out too. It's the first time I've been able to do high school football rankings without worrying or thinking about one team site publisher complaining and whining to me that their guy should be ranked higher. And right. It was so freeing and it's so cool. And guess what? Arch Manning ain't number one.
Yeah.
He's not even close. But I will tell you, if I was still working elsewhere, he's not coming off number one. There's too many other factors involved there. So that's why it's fun for me, but I don't make nearly as much money as I used to. So there's that.
Yep. Well, then people can go out and find the website. We definitely will tell you that our website has been greatly improved. Mike gives Big Ten / Illinois analysis on football recruiting that you can't find anywhere else. It really has been a huge addition to the Illini Guys website. And we would tell you to go to his website and see what you can get there, because ultimately, if you want to learn about college football, get an honest opinion, well, you can go to Illini Guys and you can go to over to his world, and that is pretty much gives you exactly what you need to stay up to date.
And someday we'll all join forces. Yeah. All the independent sites will come together and start their own network, and I could be their national guy, and it could be a fun conglomerate of people rather than just this big corporate nightmare that these other sites have become.
Yeah, well, we try to stay as independent as possible. Illini Guys, there's three of us.
Guys are like Notre Dame.
Yeah, exactly. We're independent.
Nobody wants you. Everybody wants you to come on board, but you don't want to. Forget it.
Yeah, that's us. I just wish we could figure out a way to get, you know, 70 to 90
million. $70 million. Yeah, I do too.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. We greatly appreciate your time. And we will, we'd love to have you on, and we'll have you on in future episodes as well.
Yep. Sounds good.
All Thanks. Right. Take care, sir.
See ya. Bye.
That was Mike Farrell, folks. And sorry that we went a little long there, but there's just so few people that you can sit down and talk about so many different and interesting things in the area of college football. And you even found boxing as well. So if you liked what you heard from him, go to MikeFarrellSports.com, MikeFarrellSports.com. And of course, if you like what you've heard here on the Illini Guys side of it, go to IlliniGuys.com. You can join for just $99 a year, and you get a free 7-day trial. So we don't bill you till the 7th day. We don't have many people who don't take us up on it because they love going back into the message boards on basketball and football. So please take a look at us there. And of course, if you like this podcast, I on the Illini, you can also get Sturdy for 30. That's Brad Sturdy, our longtime basketball analyst. And we also have Ked's Recruiting Roundup. Those are available at all the different podcast purveyors. And if you enjoy those, you will love our radio show, Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. You can get that on podcast, or you can go to the IlliniGuys.com, hit the radio button, and you can see all of the stations in the state of Illinois. There's 21 stations, 31 signals that you can get our program on. And all you can do is take a look and say, okay, it's on this Friday or Saturday at this time. And you could tune in and listen. But there's a few things we need you to do. We need you to subscribe to the podcast when you go there. Give us a 5-star. And you can do the same thing with the Sports Spectacular. And if you listen to it on the radio, please call your radio station. Give them the feedback that you enjoy it. So with that, I am going to sign off. And a big thanks to Mike Farrell. And we will talk to you later, Illini fans. Just coming up in a few days is the opener against Wyoming, 3 p.m. at Memorial Stadium. The Illini guys will be in town. You can see us at Guido's Friday night from 7 till 11. Come downstairs. We're doing a little bit of a fundraiser. It'll be a lot of fun. And then, of course, we will be tailgating in Grange Grove there with OSF. And we will be there to meet people, shake hands, see if we got some merchandise for you. Stop by and see us there. And, of course, we'll be covering the game at 3 o'clock. Going to be a lot of fun. Thank you very much, and go Illini.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.